You just tuned in to Set for Success with your host, Richard Lannan, and we're going to continue our journey to help you create a roadmap to change your business, career, or life. And we're going to do this through chatting with one person at a time to uncover people's lives, their business, their journey, their successes, to help you create the success that you deserve, and you do deserve to be successful. I always like to say to my guests and my listeners, you should say that to yourself. I deserve to be successful. Say that right now. It'd be awesome. All right, so you know that I like quotes. If you've been listening to the show, I always look up quotes and I try to make them relevant to the show. Sometimes I find some and sometimes I don't, but I always like to try to tie things in. So here's the Set for Success quote for today. To be successful, you have to have your heart in your business and your business in your heart. Now, that quote comes from Thomas Watson Sr. If you don't know who Thomas Watson Sr. is, he was the American businessman. He served the chairman and CEO of International Business Machines, Big Blue, IBM. He oversaw the company's growth into international force from 1914 to 1956. Watson developed IBM's management style and corporate culture from John Henry Patterson's training at NCR. And I meant to look up what NCR was, but unfortunately I did not. So maybe one of your listeners or one of the listeners here know what NCR is. Send me a note. I'd love to know. It's always an interesting quote. And I think as time goes, we often say home is where the heart is. Well, guess what? Business is also where your heart is, especially if you have a family business. There's no other greater heart in Canada than actually having a family business. And we often say the family business is the backbone of Canadian society. So I have six facts for you. So I want you to listen to these six facts. I thought this was very interesting about family businesses in Canada. I just sort of Googled them yesterday and checked them out. So here's six facts about Canadian family business. Approximately 80% of all businesses in Canada are family owned. 80%. That's an amazing number. Family-owned businesses are responsible for 60% of Canada's GDP. Now think about that. That's gross domestic product, 60%. That's another amazing number. And many of Canada's largest and well-known businesses are family-based businesses. For example, you might have heard of a small little company called Bombardier. How about maybe eating some French fries from McCain's? Family business. And maybe when you're cracking back your favorite beer, Molson's is one of the oldest Canadian family businesses in Canada. Only about 20% of Canadian family businesses have a strong succession plan, and hopefully maybe we can chat about that today. And to keep the peace, it is actually estimated that 88% of Canadian family businesses actually have some kind of conflict resolution strategy in place, which I thought that was another really amazing large number. And I guess these are all amazing numbers. When I think of those facts, I wonder about the smaller family business. You know, those hardworking Canadians who spend countless hours working in their business, providing for their families and seeking a better life. Eventually, time flies. One decade, two decades, three decades or more, and it's time to hang up your hat and transition to the next phase of life. But what do you do? Give the business to a family member? Sell it? Get an employee to buy it? Or close it down altogether? Like, these are complicated decisions to be made, especially after years and years and years of having your heart in your family business. Especially when it comes to your futures, what do you do when it's time to hand over the keys? So here's what we're going to do today. As I'm starting to give the show some thought, I wondered, who could we chat with? Someone who could share their business and life journey with us, and someone who knows something about family business enterprise. They say timing is everything. As luck would have it, my business friend Jennifer Bartman recently published a book called Diffusing the Family Business Time Bomb with co-author Evelyn Jacks. So today, we're hanging out with Jennifer Bartman, consultant and author. Jennifer, it's great to have you on Set for Success today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it, Richard.
You know, I always look forward to having conversations with you. How do I put that? I love your intelligence when it comes to business.
I'll put it that way. That's very kind.
So I always like to start off with a very similar question for our listeners. Really, I think it's important that the listeners get to know a little bit about you. Tell us a little about yourself.
Well, I'm a business advisor and, as you say, author and speaker with a bit of an unusual background. My background is in actually consulting, accounting, venture capital, human resources, and marketing. And so my role over the last several years really is working directly with business leaders, business owners, senior teams in helping them improve whatever it is that they're doing in their company. And of course, this can be a wide range of things, everything from, you know, growing the business and putting growth strategies in place to dealing with financing, dealing with succession, you know, dealing with large client situations or customer situations that they might be facing. So it's really helping them to improve whatever it is that they're doing in their business.
You know, that is a very large portfolio. I'm just curious as mm-hmm. to when you started off your career, mm-hmm. And I like this for listeners because I always like to think that there's somebody else out there who wants to learn to do what you do. Mm-hmm. How did you get started in that career?
Well, actually, I think one of the most important things in doing that is if you're different and if you have a different point of view, you need to embrace that because, you know, to make a long story short, I, you know, have a business degree, you know, came out, worked in some jobs, didn't really find what I was looking for, ended up articling in the Chartered Accountancy Program to bring, I guess, some structure through designation, but full well knowing that I didn't want to be a typical accountant. You know, that wasn't my goal. Some people, they go into the program to be an accountant and that's what their goal is, just like, you know, going to university to be an engineer or a dentist or, you know, something like yeah. that. That was never me. It was always something that I couldn't quite define. And when I was going through the Chartered Accountancy Program, I came across the consulting field and knew that that was a start in giving me a broader you know, really, a broader, more overreaching opportunity to work with businesses and really making tangible results in how they operate. I'm a very practical person in that sense. And so I got into consulting. And then I have to say that when I came across a client that was in the venture capital industry, which is raising money and investing in young sometimes startup, but, you know, really emerging companies, technologies, and so on. That was a turning point for me because those folks have really good ideas on how to build companies. And, you know, having the years of being an operator as a venture capital fund manager, working with portfolio companies, and then getting into the business advisory work for myself and sharing my knowledge through, you know, media courses, books, those kinds of things. That was really, I think, when I came into my own. And that was all just through following my own, sometimes not well-defined idea of knowing that I wanted to go somewhere that was different from a lot of people who were focusing on, you know, like I said, the goal of being an accountant or the goal of being, you know, whatever it is. For me, it was something different.
You know, that is quite the career extension. So this is what we're going to do. You know, we're going to come back shortly, and Jennifer is going to spend some time telling us about the Family Business Time Bomb. This is Richard Land for Set for Success, and we'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I am hanging out with Jennifer Bartman, and we are talking about diffusing the family business time bomb. And just before our break, we were just starting to speak to family business time bomb and what it might be. So, Jennifer, I know you got a new book published with Evelyn Jacks, your co-author. So, first of all, I want to just tell us a little bit about the book and what do you mean by diffusing the family business time bomb?
Well, I think, you know, as you mentioned in the introduction, family businesses make up a very significant portion of the Canadian economy. And most of us can think of a family business that we know in our community, maybe our friends, you know, maybe listeners out there are running one themselves. And I think there's a lot of common themes that come to mind when you think of family business, sort of for better or worse. You think of family members working together with shared purpose to provide an income for themselves and, you know, really working side by side. Of course, the flip side of that can be the, you know, the conflict and the overhang that comes with longstanding relationships that are personal and also business. And, you know, how do you work with somebody all day in a company and then, you know, go home and interact with them on a family level? And there's, you know, generations and siblings that may get along well or may not get along well. And these are the types of dynamics, I think, people think about when considering a family business. But what's interesting to me about that is that all of those things that I just said are really focused internally on the company and the family. These are the things that go on inside the four walls of the business. And one of the things that I find as a business advisor is that most business owners and leaders, they don't spend enough time what I call looking out the window. In other words, really having a good understanding of what's going on outside the company in the external environment. They might know a bit about competition and certainly what customers want, but what's interesting to me is that if you sit back and really think about the world that we're living in today, and the changes that we see, we're really looking at unprecedented change and challenge. And some of the things that we can talk about as examples, you know, one is technology. And what we see there, of course, disruption through technology has been happening for, you know, 20 years or more. But when you think about some of the things that have happened even in the last 3 years, and how the impact of technology, which we could talk about for an entire show, has changed, you know, how businesses operate, what customers want, you know, how they consume. Are they actually going into a store, or is everything purchased online? You know, what happens as a business if you can't meet that competitive offering where your competitor down the street has a full-blown technology online, you know, presence and these kinds of things? We talk about robotics and manufacturing. We talk about cryptocurrency. We talk about riderless vehicles. I mean, we could just go on and on about what it means. Yeah. So technology is one external thing that is changing the way companies do business. If companies don't keep up with that, quite frankly, their future is really at risk.
And they're limited.
One factor.
Yeah, and when we look at technology overall, I think traditionally we looked at technology as being something that was internal to the business. Oh, we needed to go through the next upgrade and everything, or we need to get a computer in place. But you're really making it referencing, and more from a support perspective, right, when you look internally. But you're really making reference to it becomes its own external economic factor or business factor that is always on the horizon, that's always threatening a business.
And it's happening constantly. When you think about, you know, like I said, you can pick almost anything in terms of how technology is impacting the efficiency of businesses, but also how customers find and procure goods and services and the types of goods and services that they want. So if you have an antiquated business that hasn't dealt with any of these things, not only are you behind today, but the future of your company is at risk. That's one factor. Think also about the significant change that we're seeing globally, things like political change, things like trade, tariffs, the economy, alliances. There's countries that are suffering with social conditions that are making, you know, life very difficult in those countries. And so we see all of that unfolding. A lot of that, like I said, we could spend time talking about the election in the U.S. and the impact that's happened there with allies and so on. All of this uncertainty in the external environment impacts how a business does business. When you see, you know, tariffs coming into play that you don't have any opportunity to impact, you're just the business that is having to face that. That can have significant impact on your cost of products if you're a manufacturer, demand from customers, and so on. So that's another really important factor that we see. We've seen significant tax changes in Canada recently that small businesses are wondering about, you know, what is the impact? Do I need to change my strategy? How is this going to impact the wealth that we as a company are generating? And finally, the last one we want to talk about quickly is demographics. We know that many of the business owners of which you speak are baby boomer age and maybe even older. They're working in their businesses longer because, you know, traditional retirement is just becoming less common.
It's not 55, right?
And so, right. And so they're getting older. We know the majority of them don't have a formal succession plan. The next generation is also getting older and they're starting to wonder, am I ever going to have an opportunity to come into this company? And if I do, when is that going to be? and how do I organize myself in this changing economy to be able to find the financing that I need or investment capital to affect a transition? And does the family business even have a future in light of all these other changes that we're talking about? So really the idea of the family business time bomb comes down to the combination of all of these external factors that threaten the longevity of a company. And of course, we know that's the crux of succession. If a company doesn't have a future, why would somebody pay money to take that over in the long term, not to mention what's happening with the family on the inside of the company?
So we'll just go with external for right now. So if I grab, just before we go for break, if I grab the four that I heard you say, technology, globally, politically, tax issues and changes, and demographics are all coming into play.
I mean, right.
But those are just sort of break it down. When we come back, I think what we can do is we'll get Jennifer to tell us a little bit more about the internal time bomb when it comes to family businesses. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Jennifer Bartman, and we were just going to talk about the internal aspect of the family business time bomb. Jennifer, maybe you can give us some insight into that, and then we'll move into sort of another family business time bomb consideration.
Well, I think in light of what I just said in the previous segment, I'm going to bet that a lot of business leaders out there haven't taken sufficient time to really think about those external factors and what they mean to the future of their company. I think, as I said before, a lot of the emphasis is typically on what happens within inside the company and family members and, you know, roles and conflicts and, you know, the initial positive things as well that happen with customers. But I think the point being is that these external factors and what's happening in this day, and I really don't see anything changing in the coming years, puts those typical family business aches and pains into perspective.
Yeah.
Because I think that if you can't position your company as one that is relevant to the marketplace over the long term, and we really refer to that in the book as a market-driven business that is based and developed, you know, based on what customers want. It is the company that has a distinct competitive advantage. It gives customers a clear reason to buy from them and so on, as opposed to just focusing on what's most convenient for the family. And so really positioning the company and taking the steps that we talk about to ensure that you're relevant to the marketplace, not just for now, but over the long term, it's those businesses that will have an opportunity to transition to somebody else, whether it's within the family or having an investor come in or a management team or whatever the case may be. Because if you think about it, if the company doesn't have a future, if it's not positioned to be successful in the future, I'm not sure who's going to pay good money for that business.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because as you were speaking, that's what I was thinking about. I was thinking, you know what, do people own family businesses? And I hesitate using this word, but I'm going to use it. Do they become a little bit complacent in their thinking about their business?
Yes.
I don't know if that's the best word, though.
And I think that comes out of perspective because, coming from a venture capital investor background, consulting background, my experience is really looking across a range of companies and organizations, right? And so if you think about the perspective of an investor or a strategic partner, financial partner, they usually have a fixed amount of capital and resources, and they've got more opportunities than they can fund or spend time on. Yeah. That gives them the latitude to choose the ones that are the best fit for them. A lot of times, I think, if you've been working in a family business for 20, 30 years, you're the expert in that company, but your knowledge base is deep within that business, but it doesn't have the range and the context that I'm talking about. And so, yes, you can get a false sense of security of thinking, you know, my company is great, everybody's going to want it, I'm going to have no trouble selling this thing. But if you don't look at the perspective of that external person who has all of these choices, you can really give yourself a false sense of security. That's a sobering lesson.
And I think that's where I wanted to go with that piece of the dialogue, because during the break, you and I were talking about similar experiences, and we were talking about dialogue that we've had with clients and how they see their business. And I used the example of, a parent passes away or resigns, and they take over the business in 1980.
Right.
And then suddenly they're at a point in their lives where they're ready to retire and they don't want to do it anymore. But they have a very interesting perspective on their business. And I often see things like, well, we're the only business in this geographic area, or we're the only business that's certified within this space, but we have competitors, but we're the ones that are certified. And so we're always going to have our clients coming in and everything. Yet I don't see them thinking about what you're talking about, the external perspective. If investors want to come in, and this is sort of just summarizing what you're saying, if investors want to come in and maybe help a child buy the business from their parents, they're looking for something else, right? Or however it's going to organize, or maybe independent investors want to see it as part of their portfolio. They have choice, is what I'm hearing you say.
That's right. And when I think about value, and this is kind of relating to what you're saying, is that business leaders, say you've been running the company for 30 years, you have a sense of what you think the company's worth. It might be based on what you've been paying yourself, for the last 10 or 20 years and do the math and come up with some big number. A lot of times that isn't the value, because the company hasn't kept up in the marketplace in the ways that we're talking about. They've taken the money out of the business instead of investing back to secure its future. And so when you look at it from an investment perspective, there's, just to simplify, there's two ways of looking at it. One is, say you have a really great company that is highly relevant to the marketplace, loyal customer base, lots of recurring business, emerging products and services that people actually want, very strong and lengthy track record of great financial results. Recognize brand name, say those kinds of things together. An investor will look at that and say, this is a great business. I'm willing to pay, a good to great level of value to step into the shoes and take this forward, because I'm confident that this company will be financially successful into the future and I'll benefit from that. That's the story that business leaders always want to hear. The reality is it's not that common. On the flip side, you might find a business that's been around for a while, recognized name, some loyal customers and so on, but it's kind of fallen behind the times, but still has a bit of relevance. An investor is going to look at that and say, I'm going to pay a lower level of value. I'm going to step in and fix it, because I know how to fix it. And for me, it's relatively easy to fix it. And then my financial benefit will be going forward as a result of my efforts. Now, business leader isn't going to be happy about that, because they're not going to get the high level of value they're expecting. This is more like a bargain purchase, shall we say. And I guess the third one would be, well, there's really no opportunity. We just need to wind it up, sell our assets, pay our bills, and move on. And I think a lot of these companies, in the absence of market relevance, in the absence of a plan, that's what their most likely future is.
Yeah, and we can talk about that a little bit. And I couldn't help but think of a friend of mine when you were talking about number two. It's been in business a long time. They've got a brand, but they've fallen behind the times, so they're not as valuable as possibly. And I have a friend of mine who does exactly what you're talking about. He calls them, I find dog businesses and I turn them around. Mm-hmm. And that's his phrase, right? Mm-hmm. He looks for those. And I couldn't help but think about the work that he's done to actually transition businesses there. And the other one is that sort of idea of the no opportunity. And so you just got to wind it down and sell off the assets and hope for the best. Because even then, I cannot help but think about the word garage sale. You're going to think that your assets are worth $1 million, but the market is truly only going to pay you $325,000 or something along that lines. That must be a significant impact also for these family businesses.
And I think it is a sobering moment for business leaders. And there's a lot of factors that can happen here. It can be not investing back in the company, so it doesn't have that good market opportunity. It's not competitive anymore. Maybe the kids who could have taken it over have moved on because too much time has passed. There's any number of factors there. And that's really the option that's left. And you mentioned earlier that the vast majority of business leaders, they don't have a formal succession plan. And when I say formal succession plan, I mean a written plan that is based on you know, all the other routine planning you need to do in a company, the annual budgeting, forecasting, the business plan, and so on. Then you have a succession plan that incorporates all of that. You have successors who've been identified. You figured out how they would undertake a transaction. They've got the resources to do that, or you've come to some arrangement and they want to. There's a lot that's involved in developing that formal plan.
So I think what we're going to do is, Jennifer, I think we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I think we should talk a bit more about succession plans and what are some of the key elements that must happen. This is Richard Lanford, Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Jennifer Bartman's been hanging out with me today, diffusing the family business time bomb. Jennifer, we were going to talk about the key things in succession planning. But, you know, during the break, I said there's a question I always want to ask. And I'm amazed, you know, what happens in conversations with people when it comes to family business. But explaining to a family business owner, and so let's just say they've been working in their business for 40 years. Why is it so important for them, if they want to sell or get out of their business and just retire and have retirement income, to actually have a strategic plan for their business before they finalize or retire?
Well, I think the short answer is that if you look at strategic planning or business planning, where you're looking at what is the future of this company for the next 3 to 5 years, and what are the financial results that are expected to come from implementing the strategy that is in the plan, this is really the forward-looking piece that allows you to define and identify a significant part of what the value would be when you sell your company. Because without, you know, getting into too much detail here, when you value a business and you're trying to make the case that it is an ongoing company with a future that is relevant to the marketplace, that is what accountants call a going concern, a significant portion of the value, it doesn't come from, say, you know, the assets and the things that you have around the office, but it comes from the future cash flow and income stream that would be derived from the next 3 to 5 years. And so if you don't understand that as a business owner, you know, number one, it's very difficult to be able to advocate for a high level, you know, a good to great level of value on sale. A lot of historical financial results, like I said, because there's so many changes in our external environment. You can look at the history and say, okay, there's a strong financial operating history there, but we need to look at, given the disruptive change, what this company looks like in the future. And so doing this is really the cornerstone, the foundation in many ways of being able to position your company for sale. I think the other just little quick thing I'd mention is, in the case of family businesses, say where the next generation is going to take over, unless they have significant financial resources to be able to buy out the shareholdings of the founder, they're going to have to go to a financial partner, whether that's a bank or some type of investor, with a well-written, investor-ready business plan that basically makes the case as to why they should lend them the money or invest in the business. And again, this strategic plan that we're talking about, business plan, is foundational to that.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. And it's amazing how many times, and you probably do too, how many times that conversation comes up, right? Again, the reason why I raised the question to you is because I will meet a business owner, I could be interviewing them just like we're doing right now. And they'll say, well, I'm 65 and I want to retire, so I just want my retirement income, but it's all tied up in the business.
Right.
So it's almost like, you know, sometimes it's almost like they think of it as a RRSP or a tax-free savings account where they can just withdraw from it. And that's not the case.
No,
right?
That not at all.
That is not the case at all.
Not at all.
The other piece I can't help but wonder is valuation, or the idea of the future of the business. And I'm sure you have addressed it either with clients and or in your book. When it comes to the resources, we're talking about family businesses. Chances are there's a son, a daughter, maybe some grandkids involved, maybe a few cousins, third cousin once removed, right? There might be working in the business. I've often wondered, how does that impact the idea of what the business might be worth or what it should do going forward?
Well, there's a number of chapters in the book on just that. But I guess the short answer would be, you know, number one, are all of those people involved in relevant roles in the company, or are some of them just working there as a job because they're part of the family? Getting back to this idea of a market-driven business, it's the companies that are best positioned in the marketplace to meet the needs of customers and to perform well that are the choice of financial partners. And you can't do that, say, if the company is comprised of a bunch of family members who don't really have a defined job, aren't adding value, can't run the company effective going forward. That business isn't going to last. Who's going to be their customer? And so I think, part of the strategic planning and the business planning piece, and I really believe this is not just upon sale, but this is how you run a company well, is when you have those pieces in place, you can perform well financially, generate an income stream for the family, and then that puts the family in a stronger position. I think the worst thing you can do is have a company that isn't really very effective, doesn't really have a future. That company's wound up and goes away. How does the family earn a living? That's really the risk.
And I guess that's why I was asking it, because, having spent a lifetime in business, family business and corporations, a variety of different levels, redundancy, relevancy, productivity, people management, it all comes into play. And I know just from life experience, right, professionally mm-hmm. and personally, we've probably been to companies, even as customers, where right. we know it's family members and we know that they're in their job because they're there, but they're not relevant to the business.
Right.
And the other side, some businesses might actually be very well thought out. So it'd be very interesting, I guess, from my perspective, as I ramble a little bit on this, to know how relevant are all the roles and responsibilities within a family business?
Well, it's extremely relevant. And I think, again, if you're a market-driven business, you're organized and operating in a way that meets the needs of the marketplace, as opposed to what we call a lifestyle business that is really based on what's most convenient for the family, customer kind of aside, right? And there's yeah. a significant difference there. The lifestyle businesses really run the risk of not attracting a good to great level of value or a successor at all, because there's just really nothing for them to take forward. And so there's a number of chapters in the book that talk about things like, family members who are working in the business actively. How do you work with them to define the right roles? How do you set expectations around what's required to fulfill the role successfully? Training, education. How do you deal with family members that are passively involved? They might be shareholders. They're not there day to day. They have certain expectations, but how do you keep them sort of on the bench but still engaged? And then one of my favorites are the external non-family members who come in to bring very specialized skills to the company in order to move it forward that the family doesn't have. So yeah. this is really that notion of professional management in family businesses. This can be a push and pull of like, yeah, we want this person, we need this person, but then this person comes in and starts making the right changes and all of a sudden, everybody's up in arms. And so this is a quandary for family businesses as to whether they're going to be able to let in people who can move them forward in a market-driven way over the long term and build that value versus just rest on what they alone themselves can do, which may be limited.
All really great points. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing it?
I would say visit my website, jenniferbartman.com, and it's Jennifer with one N.
Yeah, I mean, it is Jennifer with one N. Just remember that, because I know I've made the mistake a few times. So Jennifer with one N, Jennifer Bartman, B-A-R-T-M-A-N.
MAN.com. Yes.
So Jennifer, awesome guest. I really appreciate you hanging out with me today. Great content. If you had, say, maybe 15, 20 seconds for a final thought, what would that thought be?
I guess my last thought today would be for business owners out there who are listening to this and maybe thinking, we have this all figured out and we don't really need to concentrate on any of those things. I think that that's a real risk point. It is a mistake. And I think, based on the experience that we both have, it's rare when you come across companies who have fully addressed all of these areas as best they can. It's the strong businesses that say, yeah, I've done a lot of things, but there's still tons to do. Yeah. So don't make that mistake.
And I'm glad you support the notion that family businesses for succession, right, require strategic plan and a business plan, not for themselves, but for the potential investors.
I think for both.
Thank you very much for joining me. You know, you're such an awesome guest.
Thank you.
I love your level of knowledge
and
experience. So I really appreciate that. And I appreciate you sharing it with our listeners. Listeners, of course, I want to thank you for hanging out with me today or us today. And if you have a thought, an idea, or a question regarding the topic or the show, richard@setforsuccess.ca. And remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.